Welcome to episode 143 of the Atomic Powered Supercast with your hosts Andrew, David, and Jen. This week, we read Mass Effect Redemption by Mark Walters and John Jackson Miller. And now, the cast begins.
Okay, everybody, welcome to another Prothean episode of the Atomic Powered Supercast. My name is Andy, and I'm hanging out with David.
Hello.
And Jen.
Hey.
And this week, we're starting off our video game comic book series. So, video game movie crossovers, we know already don't work, right? There's no video game based on a movie that's good, no movie based on a video game that's good. Right, generally speaking?
Fair enough, yeah.
I'd say that's true.
So we're going to see if that holds true for video games, right? And Jen and I decided to start off with Mass Effect, because Mass Effect is probably one of the most important sci-fi video games or sci-fi influences of the last couple years, I want to say. And but mostly because it's a good game, but more than that, because the writing in it is phenomenal and it's such a big, expansive universe. So I thought we'd start there, especially since this comic book, Mass Effect Redemption, is written by the story writers for Mass Effect 2. Mac Walters and John Jackson Miller, and I think the art for this was Omar Francia, not the boxed wine with a C, Francia.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Francia, the boxed wine?
I don't drink a lot of boxed wine.
Oh my god. See, this is how you guys know I'm a hick. Drinking boxed wine out in an orchard. That's my high school years.
Nice.
So yeah, I thought this would be a good place to start, but before I load off, I want to say, David, what is your familiarity with Mass Effect going into this?
I know that it's a game. I've never played it.
All right.
But it's a game that I've always wanted to play because I like sci-fi and I like big universes.
Mm-hmm.
And this game, from what I understand, this game definitely has it.
Oh, yeah.
But I just never got around to playing it.
And it's daunting now that all three issues are out, or not all three, now that all three of the games are out, it's daunting to, like, look at this 180 hours of gameplay and be like, all right, let's do it. It is daunting to get into it, so I understand. I've played through it
three times.
See, I'm in the midway. I'm, like, right smack in the middle of, well, not in the middle, probably, like, the first third of Mass Effect 2. I'm out getting the rest of my team, doing the loyalty missions. I haven't gone through the Omega 4 relay. If anybody's playing knows where we're at, I'm not at any of those points. But Jen, you just said you played through this three times?
So I just want to give some perspective on my fanaticism here. Like, comics for me are fairly recent. Like, you know, some manga and stuff in high school, but it's new. I have been playing video games literally for as long as I can remember. I think I had the controller for a Sega Master System in my hands when I was, like, maybe 3 or 4 years old. So this has been, like, the biggest time suck hobby in my entire life.
It was a time suck, but that's why games like this, I feel, are so important.
Yeah,
because
no.
The story in this is interactive and creates character and plot in a way that couldn't happen outside of a video game. And so that's why I'm interested, too, to read the comic, to see if that same, like, level of depth carries over.
Yeah, so
just, not a time sink. It's worthwhile nowadays.
Well, no, I'm not saying this is, but, yeah. Like, I guess not a time suck, but I've devoted much time to video games. Okay. And in that context, Mass Effect is my favorite, like, this as a whole is my favorite video game out of all of them. So that's, like, high praise.
So, okay, for anybody with reference, I play Paragon Vanguard, and I'm stuck.
What that means?
I started a second playthrough with a Renegade Infiltrator. I think I want to say
Infiltrator all the way.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know what that means.
It's okay. Rogue? You will find it. You'll find out on, like, the second load screen when you first start up Mass Effect.
Yeah, I know.
But just for people who know, so that they have perspective, maybe. I don't know. I think it's fun to talk about. I love being Paragon. But I can't wait to play Renegade.
It is fun both ways.
So wait, what was your first playthrough, Jen?
So my, like, quote unquote canon Shepard is always an infiltrator, who's a Paragon. But the, like, I've always done a Renegade run, and I will say Mass Effect 2 has, like, one of the best quick time events in all of video gaming, where you get to kick a guy out of a window, like, 100 stories up.
You get to defenestrate someone?
Yes. Yeah. You get to defenestrate someone.
That's like, it's, you just never get to use that word.
I know,
right?
But this is perfect. This is the word, the use case. So, David, what did you think about this comic book? I'm most specifically interested in your barrier to entry. Like, did you go into this and finish it feeling like you got a complete story?
Yes, there was a beginning, a middle, and an end, and there was a conclusion and all that stuff. The problem is, it's like, there were parts of the comic that were supposed to be like, I could tell that this comic is written for people familiar with the reading material, and that's, or with the video game, and that's fine. That's not a knock against this comic at all. The problem is, though, if you pick this up, this is the first Mass Effect comic, right?
Yes.
So, if you're unfamiliar with the material and you start reading it, you can kind of get through it. The problem is that there's references that I think I'm missing out on.
I think,
like,
you're right.
Like the collectors, right? Everyone's like, oh shit, it's the collectors.
And you know what's, like, funny is you never meet a collector all of Mass Effect 1.
That's true.
But see, I don't know that.
But you don't know that, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know that that's a thing that I shouldn't know about. To me, reading it, coming from where I am, it doesn't... To me, it's like, what does this mean? Who are the collectors? Why should I be scared of them? You know?
Yeah. See,
go ahead, sorry.
I was just going to say, I was worried about... See, the way I look at it, I was able to read those the same way I can do it in the video game. Everybody's afraid of them. I imagine it's like Skrulls in the Marvel Universe. I knew Skrulls were supposed to be bad before I ever read one in a comic book. Mm-hmm. For me, what I was worried about when I was reading this was, like, I don't know, somebody makes reference as like an angry Hanar, you know? And
well, I feel like
you don't get that unless you know what a Hanar is. And then, like, when we see an Elcor, like the elephant looking dude, like the interjections of how he talks.
Yeah, he's describing the mood or emotion behind the speech.
And I think you totally lose out on how that works because you haven't heard it in the video game.
Yeah, it was clunky.
And then, like, another thing too is, it's like going along that line, like, I kind of know what a Krogan is.
Mm-hmm.
Just being exposed to stuff. I know that the Krogan is like a brute. Well, okay, maybe I don't know. They're kind of, he's like a brutish, like, soldier type guy, right?
Yes.
I don't know if that's correct.
That's accurate.
Totally.
But they make, like, I feel like he was kind of the butt of a joke in the part where the Blue Sun mercenaries ambushed her.
Mm-hmm.
And Farron. I thought that there was supposed to be a joke there, and I didn't. Maybe there wasn't, but to me it felt like I was missing out on something. They were like winking at the reader, and I wasn't part of that.
Like, they're winking at you, and you're like, I don't know what you're talking about, bro.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And then on the opposite spectrum, Jen, did you feel like this did not justice to the video game? That's the wrong term to use, but, like, did this feel like a huge departure? Did you feel like this was a drop in quality, per se?
Actually, yes. I felt like the writing was far more clunky than in the actual game. I feel like, although the writers are strong video game writers and good at dialogue, they didn't quite know how to frame a comic, because, you know, the medium is pretty limiting compared to a video game.
Yeah.
In some ways. So, like, they would do things like they'd show the Elcor explaining his emotes, and that seemed kind of obvious after a few speech bubbles, and then later someone, like, just outright explained what was going on. It's like, no, that's really poorly done. And I don't think they did Liara very well.
Yeah, Liara. What's your impression of Liara for this, David? Because you have no former impression of Liara. So I'll be interested to get the comparison.
I feel like I am doing a disservice to the character because she's clearly a very important character. But she seemed kind of like... See, I hate to say this, but she seemed kind of like weak-willed and kind of ineffectual. Which I feel like that is the wrong way. That's not how this character is in the game. Because clearly she's a very important character. Like, what I mean is, like, if I can compare them to other characters in sci-fi, she's like a Counselor Troi as opposed to a Princess Leia.
Perfect.
Yes.
She's clearly a badass. I mean, she's got cool powers of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
But she seems like she's really out of her element, and I think that's true. I think she definitely is out of her element, because this is like a cantina, like a Mos Eisley cantina type of place.
Yeah.
Or Mos Eisley in general.
Yes.
Look at me. Fair warning. I'm going to use a lot of sci-fi references because that's how I'm categorizing the things in my mind.
That's the frame of reference we have.
Yeah. So she's like a Counselor Troi. And the reason I say that, think about who Counselor Troi is. That's Counselor Troi in Star Trek The Next Generation for people who have no idea what I'm talking about. But if you don't,
then we're taking your geek card.
We still like you. We'll at least cut a corner off.
Yeah, cut a corner.
But Counselor Troi is a very important character on the Enterprise. She serves a purpose of some type. I don't think it's entirely clear
in the show.
She's Captain Picard's lie detector, basically.
Yeah, actually. That's about her job.
But, like, people, like, Worf loves her, and then Riker loves her, and then they love her at the same time, and then these guests come on the show that also love her. Everybody loves her. And she's a very nice character, but she doesn't seem to do anything. You know, even the episodes that are about her, it's like, why, what is this?
Those are the worst. I swear to God, those are the worst episodes. I just finished watching all seven seasons. Okay. The seasons about her are the worst.
And so what I'm not saying this comic is that bad, but it's like, okay, she's trying to complete this mission, and it's just like, she doesn't do anything. She's just along the ride and telling everybody what to do, kind of, but not really telling them what to do.
I got the exact same feeling as you did. I got it by, like, the end of the second issue. I realized she's just going wherever people point her, and she's just being completely used by the situation. And I had thought after reading it that it was because this was poorly written by contrast, but I think I could rationalize it in my head now, because you mentioned that she seems to be out of her element, and you're very much right. In the comic book, she's a nerdy person who's she's an archaeologist. Okay. She's basically supposed to be Indiana Jones, but without the whip and badassery, just the nerdy Indiana Jones, you know? And so going to Omega and being this badass biotic woman is very out of character for her. And when you mention the phrase, like, just not having direction, I think that's the important part that's supposed to be defining her character here. Mm-hmm. Because her leader, and in my case, her lover, is dead during this comic.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so she is literally without direction, she's without a leader, and she's just going towards that goal without any direction or leadership or what's anything like that.
Right.
And so, but that's something that you cannot get if you had not played the game. And if you cannot get that, that makes this character really shallow, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I know that I'm not supposed to feel that way about her. But that's the way she comes across if you have no frame of reference. Yep. Like, I know that Captain Shepard is the hero of the game just because I go on the internet. Okay. but I don't know, like, why do I care about him? Why does she care about him? Why do the collectors want him, which never gets answered? Why does Cerberus want to get his body? Why does his body matter? I kept thinking, you know what I kept thinking as they were getting closer and closer to the body? I thought it wasn't going to be his body.
Hmm.
That would have been an interesting
And so when that didn't happen, I was like, what's the payoff here? I thought that when they were trying to, like, restore him, that they were going to be like, oh, wait, this isn't Captain Shepard. He's still out there. Mystery! And it's going to make me want to continue reading. But it's like, but then the end of it is like, play Mass Effect 2!
Yes. And I think...
Which is okay, but it is not... So coming from the point of view of somebody just reading the comic only and not thinking, I'm going to read this comic and then play Mass Effect, even though that's what happened. But I was like, okay, that's I guess the story's done now.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Kind of a weird thing, too, is... I mean, obviously this comic was kind of made to boost sales, and this I'm gonna spoiler you a little.
That's okay.
A lot of the stuff isn't in Mass Effect 2, like this direct plot line. It's in the DLC.
Okay.
So to me, it feels like this was a slightly. I mean, it's good because it means you don't have to read the comic to play the game and get what's happening, but the tie-in felt a little weak. Honestly, just because Liara's doing all this crap and then we're kind of like, oh, the collectors. And even in the game, unless you played the DLC, which actually came out like a bit later after the game's initial release. So, you know, like people who just played it when it came out might have never gotten to it. It seemed like there was no real payoff for this plotline.
Yeah. And you're right, David. It does affect the ending. The fact that I think they're trying to write this to drive you towards the video game. Because they do give you a sense of the kind of expansive universe that exists for Mass Effect.
Yeah, and see, that is very attractive for me because I like big universes.
And I mean,
like sci-fi that is like that.
How many alien races did we get in here? We got Drell, Elicor, they mentioned the Hanar, we get... The Asari, the Krogan, the Turian,
collectors,
humans, Solarian. Collectors, Solarians. I mean, we have that's 9, and I'm sure we're missing some. We have 9 already, so you get a sense of how big this universe is, you know, and that makes you want to go play the game. But I think you're right. The ending says, "Go play Mass Effect." The ending doesn't say, "Go buy the next comic to see how the story continues."
Just as a side note.
Mm-hmm.
I remembered suddenly, this all becomes relevant in Mass Effect 3. So it's like, you still have to wait an entire game for the actual stuff to come into, like, main continuity plot lines.
See, and that's kind of cool for me, though, because that means that they've tied all this together through 3 video games, right? But I feel like if you're going to make the commitment to write this comic book, maybe make the commitment to have somebody write the comic of a run through through Mass Effect 2. Like, if that story is so good, maybe just make the story available independently of the game. And the game is obviously going to be a more immersive, better experience if you have the 60 hours to drop into it. But if you're people like me or David who don't necessarily have the time, or Jen, who don't necessarily have the time to run through like an 80 hour video game, you know, it gives you that option to continue the story. And then maybe they can give this a slightly different ending to draw you into that comic book that has a slightly different story.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. So did you have a favorite character in this, David?
I liked Farron. He was interesting.
Yeah. He's not in the video games, as far as I know.
There's really only 2 characters, though, right?
Yeah.
That matter. There's Asari. Wait, no, that's her race. Liara.
Yeah. Yeah, they call people by their race a lot.
There's Liara. There's just Liara and...
Farron.
And Farron. I mean, there is kind of... What's her name? Miranda?
Miranda, yes, yeah. Miranda.
She's in it a little bit. Are these characters that appear again in the game?
Or is Miranda's just a main
Miranda's
character.
A main character.
Elusive main Man character. Is...
Yeah. There are a lot of main characters that do show up.
Okay.
But in this, there are quite a few that don't. I don't know if he comes up in the game later. Like I said, I'm midway through 2, but I don't know Pharos.
See, to me, everybody except Farron and Liara felt like throwaway characters. Not throwaway characters, but it's like they were kind of irrelevant. But maybe if I had played the game, I would know who these characters are. Did any of these characters appear in Mass Effect 1?
No.
Liara.
Well, Liara, yeah.
Just Liara, actually.
Just Liara. Yeah, the rest of this is all Mass Effect 2.
Yeah. So the only people that I had any kind of... that I formed any kind of connection with as a reader were Farron and Liara. And I thought Farron was interesting. I mean, compared to what I said about Liara being Counselor Troi, you know, it's, you know, he's the only one that was that I thought was, like, cool. I'm using, like, air quotes, cool. But, like, Liara was okay, but I didn't find her to be a likable character.
Yeah. And I agree with you on Farron. This is a short miniseries. It's only 4 issues. And even in that, these issues were pretty short, too. And we can talk about how the fact that if I had paid for these off of a bookshelf, I would have felt rather ripped off by how short these were. But I think Mass Effect 1 was free with the video game or something.
Well, they were, 25 pages?
20 were they? It felt so much shorter. I don't know why.
Just about
it,
that.
It was a very fast-moving comic, but we can go into that some more later.
Yeah. But Farron was dynamic. And even though you didn't... even though his motive was told in a clunky manner at the end of issue 4, where he explains that he was not a triple agent or whatever, but he basically does the aside and explains who he is and where he came from, you know. Even up to that point, he's a dynamic character in that you don't know what his actions are going to do, what he's going to dictate. And like when he shoots, what was it, Tazik? When he shoots Tazik's ship early, I immediately think he says oops or crap or something like that, but I immediately thought he did that on purpose, you know? And it's kind of, I didn't have any intuition about the actual intentions behind a character's actions other than with him, you know? Like, I never had some thought, like, maybe Liara is doing something in her mind different from what I'm reading on the page. She was never that deep of a character for me, but Farron got there. And later on, it was all explained, and he really did do that on purpose, and all that kind of thing. So it validates me as a reader to read that later. Like, I was right. I was fucking right. There's more to this guy than meets the eye. You know? And so, but he's the only one in this comic who reached that level of depth.
Yeah, I mean, I guess as someone who's played the games, I feel like they could have done a lot better with all of them, because you see them, like, so fleshed out later in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even the Elusive Man by Mass Effect 3, you get a really good sense of his motives and what he's doing, and it's really interesting. And he was also super racist in this when he isn't in the game as much.
Yeah.
So that was kind of weird, but the thing, too, with Liara, she felt somewhat fleshed out, but the thing about her, and I'll just provide some background for David and anyone who hasn't played these games, is so her species lives up to about 1,000 years old. And although she's basically a child in, you know, that
their
sense, she's
standards.
Yeah, in their standards, she's 100. So she's kind of like geeky and socially inept in a lot of ways, but she has practical experience, and she kind of acts as like a source of wisdom for Shepard in the first game and becomes like a total badass by the third. And I feel like maybe they were supposed to be transitioning a little with some of their dialogue. Like sometimes she's like really cool and she's using her biotics to beat up a bunch of people and standing up for herself. And then other times she seems really like almost anime, magical girl-like. Mm-hmm. There's one scene where she puts both of her hands on Farron's shoulders and is like, hey, we're gonna go get Shepard now! Like, after he tells her there's still a chance, and it just...
Yeah, that is a good way to put it. For a character, like, I would never know that she is a source of wisdom for anybody based on this comic, because she seems very... immature is not the word, naive, I think, is more of a is what I'm thinking of. Because to me, like the wisdom, like the I want. I'm saying fatherly, but I don't mean men only. You know, like the or like a grandfather or grandparent type character, like the Oracle in The Matrix, maybe.
Okay.
Who gives? Who provides that advice that you think you don't need, but they give it to you anyway, and then you end up realizing that they were right all along. She doesn't seem like the type of character that would act in that way, because she seems so naive and seems like she doesn't really understand the ways of the galaxy or universe, however big this place is.
Hmm. Yeah, and it's kind of strange, because in the games, she's inept on an individual level, and really good on a macro level. In terms
she's
of social,
awkward is yeah,
but yeah, she's like totally awkward, and then she also understands like real world things. Like she would know that Omega is gritty and dangerous and filled with felons, and it seemed totally reversed here, where she doesn't know much about Omega, but she has a really good face-to-face interaction with Farron the whole time, and kind of gets him. Whereas I think it should have been the opposite.
Mm. Okay. So, the question I have for you, Jen, do you feel like there were missed opportunities in this comic where maybe bringing in somebody from the game would have helped it? Because the only person we really get from the game, like David says, is Deara. I mean, we get kind of cameos with Miranda and the Elusive Man and the Shadow Ripper and Aria. But in terms of members of the squad, well, I guess Miranda's a member of the squad, is there any more people that you feel like should have shown up that could have been given a bigger role that would fit in naturally?
Okay, well, this is with the caveat that they had more issues, because I think perhaps part of the problems this comic has are that it didn't have enough space to work with. So it didn't get to, like, develop all the plot and all the characters as well as it could have if it had maybe, like, 6 issues or 10, but I would have loved to see Garrus and Morden. Mm. So, Garrus Vakarian is a main character in all 3 games, and Morden is a character in the 2nd and 3rd games, and they are main party characters. Like, you interact with them quite a bit, so it would have been nice just because, I don't know, I kind of feel like when you make a comic like this, you're also doing a bit of a shout-out to fans.
Mm-hmm.
So it would have made sense for those 2 characters to be in this comic, and it would have been kind of a neat, like, hey, look, you can drool over people that you like or something. I don't... you know, they would have fit there, and it would have been kind of neat to see them.
Yeah, I mean, you get the weird conundrum, right? You add in a bunch of characters, and you kind of get that, if you're going to throw somebody in here, have it be for a reason, you know? But I also get the kind of sense, like, it would have been really cool to see Stan Lee cameos. Like, Stan Lee-style cameos of your squad, the people that are relevant. Like, we're on Omega, right? And we know, like, we're on Omega, Garrus could be there, Morden could be there, like you said, because it's natural. There's a bunch of people, though, that could be there at some given point. Maybe even fucking, I don't know, Conrad Werner, if you played the games.
Yes.
Right? Like, that would be a really cool wink, and it could just be something stupid, like a throwaway panel, you know? But then, like David said, you know, this is the difficulty of writing this, because then you put that wink in there, and it's just one panel, but if you haven't played the games, that wink is just like, okay, got no clue.
I feel, though...
Totally.
Like, I think Conrad Werner is, like, an excellent, excellent person to bring up here, because he is on Omega at this point in time.
Oh, yeah.
And he's, like, such a minor side character. He's the subject of a series of side quests that go through all 3 games. If you just, like, stuck him in the background doing something funny, like, not even with a speaking part. Mm-hmm. Like, he is fairly recognizable. I think that would have been a nice little, like, thing to do for fans, and maybe it could be, like,
have him in the bar or something.
Yeah, like, just sitting there drinking, and then people who knew could have been like, haha, I got it.
Yeah. The only thing that I'll say came off to me as a big missed opportunity is that when you play the video games, something that you get a really good sense of is that these writers have a really good knack for the moment, right? And sometimes they're great at building up to it, right? Like, you can feel it coming, you know it's going to happen, you know there's a big tense moment about to happen, and you know it's going to be there. Like on the beach at Vermeier in Mass Effect 1. They build up to that moment in a way that you know something's going to happen there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, even in one of my favorite scenes is this big... when you first go to Omega and you talk to Arya, and she says, there's one rule on Omega, it's don't fuck with Arya. But then she says, I am Omega, and she, like, spreads her arm wide in front of this big neon display, and it's this wonderful, huge visual that just comes at you out of nowhere to give you the sense of your place on this rock, right? And that's something that this game, in its storytelling, does really, really well. And in a comic book, that translates like perfect. Turn the page, boom, splash page. That's what splash pages were made for. I don't think we got a single splash page in any of this.
No, I don't think so.
I feel like that's the giant missed opportunity here, is that these writers are great at that moment, and it was never taken. And I don't know if that's a matter with the writers working, the artists, the writers not knowing the medium that they're working with. I don't know what happened there, but that's something that happened so well in the video game and is completely missing from this, is that like, the moment writing. Because I love Arya. She comes up so little, really, but I love her. I think she's one of my favorite characters Mass Effect so far. And in this, her character is consistent in this, too. She's in here, she's like the way she would be in the game.
And that's the thing, too. Like, the way that you like that character kind of makes me think about why these characters are so likable, and it's that everyone in Mass Effect is like a full-force personality. You don't run into anybody without knowing who they are. And it's funny, because I was going through the voice actor listings for the game just to bring up some points about the comic, and like, I recognized a lot of these character names, even though they were side characters, and I don't even think that's, like, because I played it obsessively. I think it's just, they write their side characters so well, you kind of remember that they're real people and have, like, a little story of their own, and they're not just there as support. It fleshes out the universe.
Yeah. And I think you put something in the notes, too, about the voices of the characters, right?
So, and
I think it's interesting that, like, you write in there that... Oh, you go ahead and say it.
Okay, so I'm just going to, like, preface it by saying I think the greatest detriment to reading this comic without having played the game is you don't hear the voices. And they chose really good voice actors. So Arya is played by Carrie Ann Moss. So when she steps up and is like, you know... Don't fuck with Arya. I just imagine Trinity saying this, and I'm like, oh, it's so good. Right?
I had no idea it was Carrie Ann Moss either when I was playing the game. I was about to say when I was watching the movie. But when I was playing the game, I had no idea it was Carrie Ann Moss because she does such a good job.
Yeah, but it does, like, kind of just sound... You get, like, a Trinity vibe in it.
Yeah.
Like, kind of that badass sense. But let's see, like, the elusive man is Martin Sheen. He is voiced by Martin Sheen. And, you know, his character appearance is Martin Sheen. The only thing they changed was the eyes.
Yeah, they actually drew him in the game to look like Martin Sheen.
It's, like, super cool.
Which is great, because I feel like I'm in, like, because when I was dating my now fiance, we obsessively watched West Wing. And so now when I play Mass Effect, I'm like, it's West Wing 2260 or whatever year it is.
That's awesome.
23rd century West Wing. All right, let's go. Working for POTUS.
That makes sense. And then, so Miranda was voiced and modeled after, like, she has the same face, but not the same body as Yvonne Strahovski, who played Sarah on Chuck.
Yeah.
And,
Oh, that
the
sounded
thing,
extra
though.
Creepy.
Yeah.
Oh, come on. Everyone loves her that way.
She's awesome.
Yeah. She's hot.
Yes, she is.
She's, like, super pretty. And they carry that through in the game really well. And she's, like, really a sultry character. But
I would not guess that from the comic. That she's
I know,
sultry.
Right? She's like a sultry badass. But in Chuck, she acts with an American accent. But I think she's actually like Polish-Australian or something.
She is Australian, yes.
So she uses her Australian accent here. And it's just, it fits the character perfectly. This kind of like snobby, sultry butt kicker is what she is.
Is that how you heard her voice, David? Australians in space?
Not at all.
See, that's so unfortunate.
I didn't get to spend enough time with that character because, I didn't get to spend much time with her, so I didn't apply any personality to her, really.
Mm-hmm.
She felt like the elusive man's assistant or something, and I'm sure she's so much more than that.
Yeah, that's about right. Well, not really. Yeah.
Well, she didn't come across as a sultry badass at all to me.
How do they describe her in-game? She's more his cheerleader? I think that's what Jack calls her.
Something like that.
Cerberus cheerleader.
Although that's, like, totally not her actual personality.
Yeah, almost gets a punch in the face for that.
I think she's, like, a CEO. She is, like, driven executive is how I think of her.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. So, let's talk about the art in this a little bit. Did anything stick out to you guys? Any scene? Any panel? Any page?
There was, I think, it might have been a full-page spread. Now I'm not sure. I'll need to actually go back and check. It's where Farron and Liara, one of the scenes where they're ambushing a bunch of people, and I think it's when they break into the Shadow Broker's place. And it's just, like, these three consecutive panels of both of them firing at people, and I think Liara is, like, bashing in someone's face, like she's punching a Batarian against a wall or something, and, like, it was a nice reminder that this is actually an adult video game with a good amount of violence, because it is a third-person shooter. Mm-hmm. Which is something the comic didn't quite capture, and it was a nice way to kind of put that back in there. And it was drawn well.
Yeah, I think it, like Jen said, I think it was drawn pretty well. I thought the covers were cool.
Yes.
They were a different art style from the interior, especially the... See, Miranda... Okay, now I'm looking at the cover for issue 4 again. Now she kind of looks like she could be a sultry badass. Because she's kind of, like, strutting, and there's, like, these...
Two guards next to her.
Guys. Yeah. And she looks like she's in charge of those two dudes.
Farron's looks cool, too. Issue number 3.
Yeah. I think in issue 4, there's a scene where Farron, after he tries to get the... When Taz realizes what's going on, and Liara jumps into action, and she uses her powers to, like... brain punch someone. I don't know exactly what her powers are.
Yeah, that's good enough.
She like uses her mind to punch these dudes, and I think that art is cool. And it's not a splash page, but it's a two panel page, and yeah. I think it was done pretty well. It's like page 15 or 16, 17, somewhere in there. And I thought that was cool. I think that the artist also does a pretty decent job of conveying emotions.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I have zero complaints about this art. Yeah. I don't think it's the best I've ever seen, but it's very clean. It gets across the message really well. You really get a good idea of what's going on. The aliens, I mean, the artist didn't design the aliens, but they are distinct enough in this. They're pretty distinct in the comic. I have no complaints. I think it was good. I think it would have been cool if there were splash pages, because who doesn't love a splash page? But I don't have any complaints, really, about the art itself. And cool. I thought the covers were really cool.
Yeah, I gotta say, it's people underestimate how difficult it is to draw vehicles and ships and things without mechanical aid. And I don't know how much of this is digital art and how much of this was pencil work, but that Normandy looks good. I think it's the beginning of issue 2 where you see the Normandy. It's mostly a spread, if not a full spread. I don't know. I don't think it's full.
But you
spread.
Get a full shot of the ship.
Yeah, and it looks good, and which is difficult to draw. I think people don't give enough credit when they see a well-drawn ship or car or something. Like, if you read Batman, the Batmobile changes dimensions every so often because shit's hard to draw. It just is. And this, I don't know, I mean, we only got it a couple pages here, so you don't know about the consistency, but it does. It looks good. But I agree, it's the consistency that's very helpful here. So, you guys want to go ahead and rate this one?
Sure.
Sure.
All right, David, let's have you go first.
So I'm going to rate this only as a comic with somebody who has no experience of the game, and I'm not going to take into consideration any of the things you guys said in here.
All
right. With that in mind, I'm going to give this comic a 2.5. That's just middle-of-the-road average comic. I think if I had played the game, I probably would have been more excited about this. But I don't really have any... I don't really have anything to rave about this comic, and I don't really have anything to complain about. So, you know... I read the comic in one sitting. I read all four issues. I thought... I never once thought, man, this is a boring comic, or man, this is fucking terrible. But I never thought, wow, this is really awesome. The art, like I said, is nice and clean, very effective. I have zero complaints with it. I thought the covers... Actually, let me give it a 3, because I thought the covers were really good. I'm going to give it an extra half point for the covers.
All right.
I like the art style of the covers. They're kind of like... I don't know what you would call that, but they're, I really liked the art style. What I will give this comic kudos for is that I really like the IP, intellectual property. And that's just from, and you know, I've seen stuff about this comic online. I've heard more than just Andy and Jen, lots of people I know. Who I trust their opinions, said this game is really good. And it's not that I never wanted to play it, I just never got around to picking it up to play. So, I'm going to go play the game, and the comic helped nudge me in the right direction. I'm going to give it a 3. I thought it was fine. I think maybe if you are into the game, maybe you'll give it a higher score. But it's definitely not a bad comic. There's nothing really bad about it. It's just kind of middle of the road. Okay. So, 3.
All right. And for reference, the covers were drawn by Daryl Mandrick.
Okay. What would you describe that art style as? It's kind of like a chalky looking, but it's not really a chalk. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not arty enough to know it.
I have no idea.
At any rate, I think they look really cool.
Yeah. I scrolled back through them. Go ahead. Which one?
I was just going to say particularly number 4.
Oh, I love number 4, but I think my favorite's number 2.
With Taz?
With Taz. And I'll roll that right into my rating. I'm going to give this a 3 as well. I was toeing the line at a 2.5, and then you bumped up to a 3 for the covers, and then I was looking at the covers and I saw Taz. And
he looks pretty menacing on that cover.
See, and this is my conundrum in rating this. Because I like Taz because his species, by and large, are frail little people. He's like, his people are kind of the hobbits of the Mass Effect universe. So for there to be a badass one is hilarious and awesome, right? It'd be like if you gave Frodo guns, like big ass arms, and like had him out there stabbing the fuck out of things. You know, it's so weird and out of place, but kind of cool. And so, from a person who's played the video games, to see a fucking buff ass tall Solarian is hilarious and so cool. And so makes me want to rage up, but. Exactly, but that's something that I think takes away from the comic, too, is that this has such a limited audience. And you're right, it has a beginning, a middle, and an end, and you can take a story away from it, but I think primarily what this comic does is give you a sense of the scale of the universe and make you want to buy the game. And in that respect, this is almost as much advertising as it is story. But I'm bumping it up because I like the idea of there being video game comics and not just as tie-ins. I think this story, this universe, that's created by these game writers, it's big enough to exist outside the game, and I think it should. I really, really think it should. And I agree with you, David. When you get to the end of 4, it feels like a story that makes you want to buy a game, and not a story that makes you want to buy the next issue. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just that switch doesn't happen until the end of issue 4. Up until then, it's just like a cool comic that would compete with everything else on the show. I've read way worse than this. I've regularly bought way worse than this as part of my pull list.
Yeah, for sure. I'm the same way, because I tend to become fervently attached to characters, and I continue to spend money until I realize what's happening. And
I fucking had Rise and Fall on my pull list because I like Green Arrow. And then I didn't take it off my pull list until after we got to the Dead Cat. And I was like, okay, this is not what I'm buying here. This is not what I'm in for. And this is clearly better than that stuff. And that thing was advertised to hell. So I'm giving this a 3 because I feel like this is better than average for what's on the shelves. But I'm reluctantly doing so because I feel like this is a comic that could appeal and should appeal to a wider audience, but instead, in the end of the 4th issue, it's turned into advertising where it should just naturally roll into a story. If it didn't do that, I would be able to give it higher without a stained conscience. How about you, Jen?
I'm glad that you guys said 3, because I was also going to give it a 3, so we are in accordance.
Huzzah!
Yay! So, I mean, I enjoyed this. It's certainly not the best comic I've ever read, and I thought that sometimes the writing was a little weak relative to the game, and, you know, relative to other comics we've read. At the same time, you know, it was enjoyable, and this is actually the second time I've read this. I read it back when it came out as, like, the tie-in, and was pretty excited about, like, playing Mass Effect 2 afterwards, and, you know, it did kind of give me, like, the Mass Effect hunger. I want to go play, but it's not so strong, and the comic wasn't so good that I'm actually going to, like, go back right now and play, because I'm busy, unfortunately. And I've played it 3 times. Don't need to again.
Yeah.
You know, it did its job well as being a good tie-in to a game that showed the universe and kind of gave you, like, a nice little hint of what was to come. And I wish that they had an ongoing Mass Effect comic that was well-written, because I would pick that up and read it every month. I'd be happy to do that. It's such a good universe. And especially if they, you know, kind of keep that tradition of having really fleshed-out characters and just an interesting world for readers to explore. But yeah, this was above average, but not the best, so a 3.
Okay. So this naturally leads us into what we're going to be reading next. Both Jen and I said, and I think David felt the same, that Mass Effect was a comic book written for video game, and where it could have been an ongoing series and should have been an ongoing series, and we might have liked it as an ongoing series. So next week, we're going to read an ongoing series about a video game. We're going to read World of Warcraft, Volume 1. It's issues 0 to 7 by Walt Simon and Ludo Lujabi. Lullaby? Lullaby? I don't know. I'll look it up eventually. Because if he's of Latin descent, it could be Lujabi, like Pollo. Lujovi? Lujabi? I don't know.
Digging yourself deeper.
And I'm just further disgracing the man. Woman? I don't even know. Ooh, God, worse. Oh, shovel. So that's what we're reading next week. If you want to know what we're reading the week after that, we have that posted on our website. All you got to do is go to www.atomicpoweredsupercast.com. On the right, there's a button. It says Future Shows. Click on that bad boy. You'll know what we're reading next week. And maybe the weeks after that. I don't know if we've decided yet if we're going to post it, but at least next week. And also the week after. And if you have an idea on what we can do after these, because we're always interested in what you guys want us to read, because, hey, you guys read good comics too, so we want to read good comics. Send us an email at
atomicpoweredsupercast@gmail.com.
And as always, please subscribe to us on
iTunes.
Oh, and I left social media out. Facebook.com/APSupercast, Twitter.com/APSupercast, and I finally added David to the Tumblr.
And yay. I posted something.
Yeah, we have a Tumblr.
Hey, before we go, I would like to plug something that I have nothing to do with.
Sick.
But seriously, guys, you all need to go watch Pacific Rim.
Oh my god, I want to so bad.
Because that movie is fucking amazing. It's delicious, even. I'm going to go watch it again, and possibly a third time. It was everything I hoped it would be. And I hope you all go and give your money to Guillermo del Toro, so the studios get the idea that people actually like these kinds of movies, and we keep seeing them, because it's fucking great. Seriously, right. It's great.
Let me know when you go to see it the next time, and I might tag along and bring my fiance.
Okay, because my wife was pleasantly surprised about how much she liked it. So.
Ooh, all right. That's a good promise.
It's exciting.
All right, speaking of promise, we'll see you all next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.